Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf. And welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Janice Wolf. I am so excited to have everybody here. We've got some new wonderful things going on. I have never seen so many people with dogs who just have dogs all of a sudden. So it's great because a lot of people through the years, we keep saying, well, geez, why is it that some people really don't like dogs, right? They didn't understand. You know, we've all had those people in our lives who say, well, I don't understand why you like dogs. Like, why would you let a dog sleep in your bed? And I look and I say, well, you let your spouse or your significant other sleep in your bed. And, you know, I would trust my dog to have fewer germs and fewer problems than I would to have a human. So I think it's pretty cool to sleep with the dog in the bed. But, you know, I have actually two clients, two new patients, one tomorrow and one next Saturday. And actually, it's funny because both of them have very similar issues. And we all want our dogs, well, most of us, and if you're listening, chances are you're one of those people, we want to have our dogs in bed with us. We want to have them on the furniture with us. There's no reason that your dog can't be on the furniture, even if you have a hairy, furry dog and you have expensive furniture. That's why they make chair covers, sofa covers, slip covers. You can do that. You can even have a specific blanket that you use that you put on there. I call it the Bridge to Narnia. And in that case, you can teach the dog that when the Bridge to Narnia is open, meaning that the chair or the sofa or the piece of furniture is on limit, you can have this special cover. It can be a sheet. I would recommend if you have a really hairy dog that you use something that doesn't trap the hair, because then when you wash it and you take it back out, you're putting the hair back onto the couch. But they have special, really cool things now for you. You can even, you know, go online and look. So yeah, it's fine to have your dog up on the furniture, but the problem arises when you don't set rules. You have to set rules and guidelines. You have to have a good relationship with your dog. I've called it relationship-based canine behavior for a long time. Natural canine behavior rehabilitation. It's natural, and it's what's natural to the dog. So if you guys want your dogs on the bed, awesome. Good for you. I've had five, six. I remember my husband and I had eight giant ridgebacks between probably 80 and 105 pounds. Eight ridgebacks plus my 6 foot 6 inch, 275 pound husband plus me. I'm little, but still I take up about the same space as 1.5 ridgebacks. And we all fit in a Select Comfort California King bed. I won't say we were always comfortable, but we were very warm. We didn't need to sleep with a lot of covers. We could turn the heat down, put the fireplace on in the bedroom, and we were all toasty for the winter. So it's great to have your dog there. And, you know, if you're, you know, germaphobe, like I am a germaphobe, but my dogs, their germs, my horse's germs do not bother me whatsoever. I'm not worried about getting something from my dog. I'm worried more about my dog getting something from going near another dog who was at a dog park. So let's talk about having your dog up on the furniture with you. What are the pros? Okay, the pros are, you don't have to sit on the floor to pet your dog. That's a good one. You don't get a backache from leaning over to have to pet your dog. That's a good one. You don't hurt your knees because you're trying to get up from the floor and you're 50 years old and you can't get up from the floor because you're in construction or carpeting or something else that you used to do. But there are some really good benefits to using the bed and using furniture, human furniture, to your advantage in teaching your dog the rules. So if you sit, let's say you sit down on a chair and there's only one spot and your dog crawls up in your lap, that's fine. But how about if you had a cup of hot coffee or tea or, you know, something to drink and the dog jumped up and knocked it over. So now you get, let's say it was a hot liquid, you get burned, the dog gets burned. That's not so good. Furniture gets ruined, that's also not good. So why not just teach your dog when he's allowed up and that he has to ask permission? That's what I've been teaching for, 35 years, long time. Because it makes sense. Dogs don't assume that you own the furniture just because it's your house. Remember, like your children, they grow up in your house that you pay for
That's why I always joke with families when the kids get a little snotty and mouth off to their parents when I'm there. And I say, your parents ever tell you to go to your room? Yeah, they do all the time. And I hate that. It's not fair. They can't tell me what to do. And I say, you know, your parents shouldn't say that. And usually about then, the parents look at me with a death stare, like, what are you doing? And I say, your parents tell you to go to your room? Yeah, yeah. Well, they shouldn't tell you. And I make a big fuss about it and I say, you know, you really shouldn't tell your kids that. That's really not a good way of parenting. What you should tell them is go to the room. Your mother and I pay for you to live in until the government says when you turn 18, we no longer have to pay for you. Go there. While you're there, clean it. Good night. And your kids will mouth off, but they will be walking up those stairs to go clean their room. And they may not be happy about it, but they're also not going to grow up and have criminal charges either, because they're going to learn some rules and some respect. So we do the same thing. You don't have to be mean to your dogs. I don't want you to be mean to your dogs. Please, God, stop with the shock collars, prong collars, choker chains, smashing your dog with whatever thing that some stupid trainer tells you to do that day, squirting them in the face with water or squirting them with citronella, you know, throwing a penny can at them. I mean, why would you want to scare your dog? If you did that to a child, you'd wind up in jail for child abuse. You should not ever do anything to ruin the relationship between you and your dog. Your dog should be trusting you. Your dog shouldn't need a come command. Your dog should be with you like me. I literally have three dogs sitting outside my office right now. I can see them. They're waiting by the door. I may let them in. And I have Wispa, I have my puppy, and I have Lexi, and they are just sitting there right by my French doors and waiting for me to open the door, which I'm not going to do right now. But they want to be with me. It's not that I have to call them, that I have to bribe them with food or to intimidate them with a shock collar, a prong collar, or yelling or squirting or screaming. All I have to do is love them. Ask them to respect me because I set rules and boundaries. They understand those. They're fair rules and boundaries. They're the same ones that I would want as a kid. So the dogs wind up not being afraid of me. My dogs, and if you see with all the service dogs we place, and like there's this one Moose and little Mason, and Jamie's probably listening right now, I show up, and let me tell you, this dog is obsessed with this little boy Mason. But Moose shows up. When I get in there, she sees me and she doesn't jump on me. She knows better at 120 pounds. She wouldn't jump on me. She's all over me. She just can't control herself. She just can't contain her excitement. Why is she like that? Why is every dog I've ever had or every dog I've ever, even I walk in and the client's dog and the dog doesn't even know me. Why does that happen? It's because I have an air about me of confidence, but fairness. So if a dog jumps on me when I first walk into the house, not my dog, but if somebody's dog jumps on me, I don't yell at it. I don't knee it in the chest. I don't kick it. I don't squirt it in the face with something. I don't use a blowhorn or a shock collar. I just give the dog a little touch with my fingertips and I walk toward it. And then the dog looks at me and I'm not looking at it. And I stand there and the owners say, oh my God, I can't believe it. My dog always jumps on people like for an hour. Why is he not jumping on you? So because I'm communicating with him in a way he understands. If I were teaching an entire class to a patient's family and I spoke a language they didn't speak, let's say I communicated with them in, Spanish and they did not speak Spanish or Hebrew, but they weren't Israeli. Or Japanese, but they didn't speak Japanese. How communicative and how could I communicate what I wanted to them? The answer is I couldn't because they wouldn't understand. So when we start yelling and screaming and oh my God, shut up already, just stop barking, and you're screaming and you're out of control, do you think that instills confidence in your dog? Or do you think your dog looks at you like, oh my Lord, the inmates are running the asylum. I hope that my mommy has a better day tomorrow because she's scaring me. So you want to be the calm one. If you're not calm and you're not confident and you don't set rules, then the dog doesn't respect you, just like children wouldn't respect a parent who doesn't set rules and boundaries. This does not mean that the dog can't walk without having, you know, in lockstep and, you know, in an army or something. It's just about teaching the dog to respect you, respect boundaries, respect those around him. Once the dog starts respecting you, he will want to be with you. Why will he want to be with you? Because he will feel safe and protected. So let's go back and talk a little bit about letting your dog on the furniture, letting your dog on the bed. So if you have your dog, and you'll have, let's say you have a dog bed, and you say, you know, I really want my dog up on the bed right now. So you can invite him. But remember, with dogs, possession is 9/10 of the law, right? With dogs too, so possession is 9/10 of the law. If the dog is on the furniture already, let's say in this case the bed, and you go away and then you come and lay down in the bed when your dog is already there, is it your bed or does the dog think it's his bed? And I venture to say that the dog will think it is his bed, not your bed. Now, it may be your bed, but you have to understand that if a piece of food falls on the floor and the dog feels that, well, it might be his food once it hits the floor because it's his floor, well, guess what? You have to teach him it's not his floor. We're going to do that another week. You have to be able to communicate with your dog, not yelling, not screaming, not getting angry, but teaching your dog what you do and what he needs to do and where the roles are. It's just basic common sense. It's the same as if you had a person with you. If two people say, oh, let's go for dinner, and one person says, we're going for Chinese. Okay, we'll go for Chinese food then. And how about if the one says, well, I am allergic to MSG, so not Madison Square Garden, monosodium glutamate. I'm allergic to MSG. Could we go somewhere? No, we're going to go there. Okay. Can we go? No, we can't. Okay. If you're a dictator, or imagine that the person who wants to go for the Chinese food, instead of just speaking, hits that person or shakes a penny can or squirts them in the face with water. And you say, okay, you won, right? You're going for the Chinese food. You got your way. But how much trust, how much connection is there going to be between you and that person? You're not going to want to go back out with that person because that person doesn't make you feel safe and you don't enjoy being with somebody who's a dictator. Dogs are allowed to make choices like kids are allowed to make choices. I just make a very huge distinction and delineation between letting a dog or a child make a choice versus making a decision. A choice is something that you can give to a dog, to a child. For instance, the dog wants to come up on the furniture or not. You say, okay, you can. You can go up on the furniture. You can go lay there. I don't care. But you have permission in this moment if you would like to. The same as you would tell it, you know, maybe a young child, hey, you can go play on your video games for a half hour, or you can go watch a cartoon. Those are your two options. And they go, well, I want to go outside. That wasn't an option. But I want to go outside. That wasn't an option. You have two options for your choice. Now, what's the difference between that and a decision? A decision is a dog biting someone. A decision is a dog running out a door. A decision is a dog to being able to basically chew on something or eat something that does not belong to it. So same as a child. What would be a decision for a child? I'm going to list our house because I don't like this house anymore. We're going to go buy a new house. Oh, well, that's a big decision. Buying a car. That is not a decision for a child. Or perhaps what they're going to be watching on TV might be more of a decision because we know certain times of the night there are some TV shows that can be a little racy for a kid. So it's that same concept, exactly the same concept. You're giving your dog choices. You can come up on the furniture when I give you permission or not. If you say, come up on the furniture, and you make it as a command, now you've changed something. Now you can't, because what happens is if you tell that dog to come up and he doesn't, he's giving you the middle paw. He's saying, I don't want to come up here. I'm not going to do what you say. That's like your child saying, I don't want to clean my room. I'm not going to. I'm going to go over to my friend's house. And what do we say as parents? I make the rules of this house, and as long as you're living under this roof, you'll follow the rules of my house. And if the kids run away, they run away. Sometimes they do. And they come back and they realize it, and their kids someday will pay them back and repay them for what they, you know, what your kids did to you. Hopefully their kids will do to them. So the idea being, of course you can let the dog up on the furniture, but you have to make sure that the dog understands that you get on the furniture first. Then the dog can be invited up. Same as if you have a little child. I remember my dad, who I was super, super, super close with my dad, and he had, we called it the Archie Bunker chair. He had the chair that it was a lot nicer than the Archie Bunker chair, but he had one of these big leather reclining chairs. And my dad would come home from, you know, work and from his, you know, traffic club meetings and all the things he used to do. He used to practice before the Federal Maritime Commission and the Federal Trade Commission and the FCC. And it was pretty cool. So sometimes he'd get home really late. And my brother and I were allowed to sit in Dad's chair. We called him Daddy. We were allowed to sit in Daddy's chair. And it was not a big deal, right? But when he came home, he didn't ever have to say, kids, get out of my chair. And he wouldn't have. But out of respect, because we respected, and I certainly respected, the fact that my father worked all day long really hard, toiled away so that we could have a beautiful house. We could have clean clothes. We could have a great life. And that's what you're doing for your dog. So you have to think more than, oh, well, he can come up whenever he wants. He's got to have respect for you. If a dog doesn't have respect, then there's no way that this dog is going to be that perfect dog. They can't be a perfect dog because you haven't taught them how to be a perfect dog. And you certainly cannot or should not be reprimanding a dog, you know, because you didn't teach him. That's like getting mad at a child because he says a bad word, but you never told him it was a bad word, so he didn't know. You can't punish a dog for not knowing because you didn't teach that dog. So in the case of furniture, what you would do, first thing you would do, is you would take the furniture, whatever, let's say in this case we're going to say a couch. So let's say you have like a love seat and there's two spots on there. So let's say you want to sit on the one side and the dog is on the other side. So you say, okay, I don't have to move the dog, right? Why do I have to move the dog? Because there's plenty of space and the place where I want to sit is open. But that's not how dogs think. What you need to do is you need to take the dog off of the furniture, just calmly, gently, take him by the collar, just gently move him forward. If you have a dog who tends to nip, bite, or towards aggression, you definitely want to reach out to us. You can call at 855-449-9288, and you can leave a message for me or one of our other behaviorists that will help you. So that's 1-855-449-9288. But read my book. It's called Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101. And that's a great book for you to read. It'll go through all kinds of things like how to choose the right dog, how to choose, should I rescue? Should I get a puppy mill dog, like a pet store dog, which is like from a puppy mill? Should I go to a really good breeder? I want to get a mixed breed dog. If you want to get a mixed breed dog, like a poodle mix or something, that all these popular mixes now, they have rescues. You can get one that's rescued that will be much less expensive and somebody else has already either ruined or put some time into to try to help. And that, you know, at least you're not spending $3,000 or $4,000 for a mutt. I mean, I remember being, when I was a kid, you know, we always had purebred dogs and the kids who had, you know, a mutt were the kids who, you know, the parents just couldn't, you know, didn't know what to do about it. And it was kind of funny, but everybody had purebred dogs and we were responsible with them. I don't know what's happened lately with all these, you know, people just trying to make money at the expense of good health, temperament, and longevity with dogs. But You know, that's a whole, that can be months of shows, right, for me to get into that. So let's go back to the sofa. You want to sit there. You're going to just take the dog's collar or use a leash. Don't look at the dog when you're doing this. And you're not dragging him off. You're gently guiding, okay? Please do not grab your dog and hurl him off the sofa. That's not what we're doing. So what you need to do is you need to take your dog, just gently take him by the collar, look toward where you're walking so you're not walking toward the couch, right? You're walking away from the couch, and just take one or two steps until the dog's front legs are on the ground. If it's a tiny dog, you can pick it up and just put him on the ground. But make sure as you're doing that, you give him a little correction, which is just a little sound. It's like a shh, like you're in a movie theater and you would shush somebody in a movie theater. You know what people think? People go like, oh, yeah, you're copying that because you saw somebody do that. No, I knew that when I had my cat Midnight Kitty, God knows how many years ago. And Midnight Kitty was probably a year old, and I had a litter of Ridgeback puppies. And Midnight Kitty was on his back in my kitchen. I can remember. I have an eidetic memory, so I was actually able to remember this very clearly. And Midnight Kitty was on his back, and one of these little, you know, 7 or 8 week old puppies, Ridgeback puppies, was playing with him and jumped and stepped on him accidentally. And Midnight, on his back, Midnight swatted at the puppy, like big swat. I mean, swatted at this puppy and didn't hit him. But all the puppies, their eyeballs opened wide. Their eyes like were like dinner plates. Like if you've ever watched a Felix the Cat episode and it goes, wow, the eyes open. All the puppies looked. And I thought to myself, whoa, that was awesome. What'd you do? And I started recreating the little touch, the little way that the paw moved, the little hissing sound that the cat moved and the cat made. So think about a snake. What's the warning sign that, or the sound of a snake? Like, let's say a cobra or a rattlesnake, right? They puff up a little, right? Or they make a sound. How about a bear? How do we know? Why do we get afraid of animals? A bear, rah, a lion, roar, right? A cat hisses. Every animal has a sound, and it's an energy. So what's our sound as humans? We don't shut up. We just talk. We don't ever shut up. Use the sound that sounds like what the dog's mama would do. What would the dog's mother do? Would she say, oh, get out of here, or hit a button for a shock collar, or squirt the puppy in the face? No. She would give a very low, what I call a mama rumble. And that sound is what the shh sound that we make, the S-H-H-H sound, like you're in a movie theater and you're asking somebody behind you to be quiet, that sound actually becomes the sound of a dog, of a mother dog, or an elder dog, let's say a 10-year-old dog, and there's a young puppy coming up. We've all said, oh, the dog's growling at my puppy. By the time that dog, the older dog, is growling at your puppy, you already taught that older dog that you are not in control, that the dog, older dog, is in control. You've taught the puppy that the older dog is in control, that you are not in control. And that's fine as long as you have the older dog. What happens when the older dog is no longer there? And the puppy thinks, oh, I must be in charge now. You realistically, absolutely, have to start thinking like a dog. I tell people, think like a dog. Think like a dog. Think like a dog. Think like a dog. What would a dog think? Like the WWJD, what would Jesus do? Would some of the kids change that a little bit? What would Jesus do? What would the dog do? WWDD, what would dog do? If a dog would do that and a dog would make a growl sound, if you make a similar growl sound, not a buh, like you're belching up a, you know, 20 beers, but just a soft sound like that, it's nature's energy. It's nature's sound. And all you need to do is calmly, gently, confidently teach your dog the boundaries, teach him the rules, teach him the guidelines. So now we're going back to the sofa, right? So you took the dog off. The dog jumped back up because you didn't communicate with him yet. You take the collar, face away from the couch, bring him off again, shush him. By that time, he may try one more time, depending on, you'll see how smart your dog is or isn't. He may do it three more times. You do it four more times. But what will happen is the dog will sit. He will lick his lips. He'll look at you quizzically like, what in the heck are you trying to tell me? And then all of a sudden, he's going to either sit, lay down, back up, or walk away, and you have now taught him the rule. So now, when that happens, and you may have to repeat it a few times over a couple of days, once he comes up, he will start learning, don't just jump up, wait a moment, come over and sit or lie down or just look up at me. Not because I'm bribing you, look at me, 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 look at me. I would always say, if I were a dog and my owner, trainer were telling me, look at me, look at me, I would be saying, you're not much to look at. Can I just have the damn cookie? Because I really don't care. I just want the cookie. The only reason I'm doing it for you, that's why I won't listen to you when you don't have the cookie. So all these things are artificial. Just think about dogs. I mean, did dogs do this 100 years ago? Think about before the clicker was invented, before electricity or the shock collar was invented. Didn't we just communicate with our dogs? Like, wasn't it like a frontal lobotomy? Wasn't like electrocution, like trying to take people who were considered to be insane and just like zapping their brains with electricity? Isn't that kind of what we're doing to dogs? We're doing it around their throat, though. Not even their head. We're doing it around this most sensitive, most vulnerable area of their body is their throat. So let's just get out of the insanity. Let's just stop the insanity. Let's stop this craziness. And let's just go back to what dogs do. Listen to your dog. Let your dog be a dog. Enjoy your dog. Stop being a dictator. Let your dog, if you want him up on the furniture, let him up. So now you let the dog up on the furniture. How do you tell him it's okay? Say the word okay. Don't tell him up or you get up here. He can have that choice. Maybe he's hot. Maybe he doesn't want to be on the furniture. Maybe he just chooses to be over by the, you know, air conditioning register. Maybe he chooses to be with somebody else. But if you pat the couch and say, okay, just like that, okay. And he now learns, oh, it's all right, and I can do that. So what will happen is you'll sit on the furniture. He'll wait for permission. You'll invite him up. If he's already on the furniture, and you're walking toward your furniture, he will on his own eventually, within days or weeks certainly, he will get off the furniture, wait for you to sit down, and wait for permission to come up. Then he doesn't get in trouble. You don't yell at him. You don't squirt him in the face. You don't shock him. You don't shake a can of pennies. And you have a wonderful relationship with your dog. Think about my way. It's not something I created. It's just something I figured out from staring at, watching, and living with a pack of 12 dogs, Ridgebacks, all my life. I've had tons of dogs since I was in my, well, very early 20s. And I'm not my early 20s anymore. My dogs, honestly, and people say this all the time, like, they're like, your dogs are obsessed with you, but they don't have behavioral issues. So my dogs love me so much. Not that your dogs don't love you dearly. But a dog who respects you and loves you will follow you to the ends of the earth. You can let them off leash anywhere. Forget about off leash training with shock collars and things like that. Some people are good at what they do, but you know what? My dogs don't run away because they don't want to. That's why my dogs don't leave. I have a 5-acre chunk of property here. I open the door. I tell them, go take a break. They go outside potty, and they come right back. There are deer. There's foxes. There's all kinds of animals here. No bears, but a bunch of everything else. And they don't run away. They don't want to run away. It's the same as if I had a 12-year-old child, and I said, you know, hey, go get that from, please get that from the car. Kid goes out, gets it from the car. I don't need to babysit my 12-year-old. So try teaching your dog instead of training your dog. And in this way, your dog is going to be a way better dog for you and a way better neighbor and a great, great, great example for other people who will say, wow, that pit bull's amazing. I was scared of pit bulls. That dog is so well behaved. Or wow, I thought those dogs, you know, whatever, an Akita, I thought they were aggressive. They're really good. So do what your dog needs instead of train, 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 treat, 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 cookie, 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 shock, shock, shock. Just have that relationship. Have a good, healthy relationship. Teach your dog, let your dog know that you're in charge, not that you're the boss, not that you're dominate the dog. You are the one who's providing for that dog's needs, protecting him. And he will, in turn, act like a member of the family. He'll act like a child instead of like a parent. You have to start acting like a parent instead of a child. And I'm not saying you are, just saying. And the perfect time to take a convenient break. We'll be right back with From Shelter Dog to Service Dog in a moment. And welcome to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, you know, I've been doing these shows for a really long time, and one of the questions I've gotten, and I think we've been doing this show since 2008, maybe, long time. One of the things that I think is really important is people who say, you know, I want to have a service dog. And a lot of people really do want to do a good job of it. But you have to remember that not every dog is going to be able to. Not every dog is going to be appropriate for that type of job. I believe about 1 in 100 shelter dogs, and it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is if you think the number of shelter dogs out there, well, about 1 in 100 can be a service dog. It doesn't mean, and when I say that, people, oh, you could get a lot more than that. A service dog, the way Merlin's Kids does it, a service dog the way I train and my staff trains and our people train, behaviorally, the dogs need to be perfect for public access. They need to be completely housebroken. They cannot be lacking confidence. They cannot be overly confident. They cannot be dominant. They cannot be dog reactive, aggressive, cannot be food reactive, aggressive. They cannot be motivated by other things other than love and being petted, because if you start with a dog who's overly food motivated, it'll be a great obedience dog potentially. It is not going to be a good service dog. And you can argue with me, but oh well, it is not going to be a good service dog unless you are able, you know, to really teach the dog what you want it to do and how you want it to do that. But for the average dog, and you can think about dogs you've had as a child, childhood friends' dogs, all these different things, you can think about it as, like, how would you handle that? Okay, how would you, like, what would you do if your friend's dog, who's the best dog in the world, and it jumps on you? So could it be a service dog? Well, if it's the best dog in the world and that's the only issue, yeah, we can fix that. But we always want to assume that a dog could potentially return back to the behavior if it's with a weaker energy person. So let's say, for instance, I have all the time, I have patients and I have them and people will send them to me and the dogs will be perfect. Now, maybe they didn't start perfect, but I fix them and within days they are doing great. I then have to cement those behaviors into them, because when they go home, they've got to know that behavior and accept that behavior. But I can't just give the dog to the parents, to the family. I have to teach the family what to do. Same thing, even way more so, with a service dog. So what is a service dog? What's the best thing? We've talked about this before, but I think it's a really important part of actually learning how to train a service dog. So what does a service dog need to do? What should it be? Like, what's the ideal dog? Is a golden retriever the ideal dog, or a lab, or a whatever a doodle thing is, or a German shepherd, or a whatever? What is the best dog to be a service dog? If you ask me that, you are just clueless about service dogs. Because what do you need? What do you as an individual, what does your disability require? How do we mitigate your disability? So if you're a 6'3" man, a yellow lab that's 60 pounds is not going to be an adequate mobility dog. It's just not. You may need a nice big ridgeback, a nice tall well-built, maybe Mastiffy or Mastiff mix or Dane mix, although they tend to, you know, not live as long. Although, you know, if you take care of them right, sometimes they do. If you breed them right, they can live longer. So, well, a Great Dane, but how appropriate would that be for like a five-year-old child with diabetes? No, it wouldn't be at all. So before you ask what kind of dog is a good service dog, you need to find out what that dog's tasks will be. What does that dog need to do to mitigate a particular disability? Because that's really what ADA of 1990, that's revised about 10 years ago, is really about. So if, let's say, you need a diabetic alert dog, or you have a seizures, if you have a little tiny dog, it's not that the little tiny, you know, 5 or 10 pound dog can't do that job. It's that, does that dog have the ability to do that job? Now, I trained for my dear friend Kathy, a super talented Yorkie. Yeah, 4.5 pound Yorkie. I almost died when I found out what kind of dog she wanted me to train. I said, you want me to train a Yorkie? Yeah, I do. Well, this dog is one of the best service dogs I've trained, other than the ones that we train at Merlin's Kids. So I asked her, I said, well, what do you need the dog to do? And I'm not going to tell you because it's nobody's business, but she told me. And I said, well, you know what? We can make that work. The only problem is that the dog has to be within about 4 feet of your mouth and your nose to be able to scent and to be able to tell when those blood levels, which would be coming out in your breath, might be getting low or high or whatever what it is that we need. So you'd have to carry the dog in a bag, right? You'd have to have the dog up near you, whereas a large dog like Wyatt or a Moose or Dexter or any of these, the big dogs, the Ridgebacks that we use typically, they are already within 4 feet of you just by the virtue of the fact that they're larger dogs. You need a mobility dog. We have Dexter and our handsome Kier. And Kier is 10 years old, but he's going to be tall. So when he needed the dog for his purposes, we chose Dexter, who's 140 pounds, and he's enormous. He's easily the size of a good-sized Great Dane. But he's a Ridgeback, so he should hopefully live a lot longer than a Dane would, but very wonderful dog and really sweet and helps him a lot. So for him, he needed something that was larger that he would be able to use for that purpose. A dog that's, let's say, for diabetic alert. It can be almost any dog that has a good sense of smell. And one of the things, anyone who's looking to have a good service dog, if it's anything that has to scent, in other words, it has to use its nose to smell things, you want a dog that does not pant a lot, okay? A dog who's panting, think about it, if you're breathing through your mouth, and I tell you, can you smell the perfume? If you inhale through your mouth, it doesn't go through your nose, so you're not able to scent or smell that. Literally, you don't smell it. That's why when you have a cold and you have your head and your nose is all stuffed up, you can't taste things. Because part of what we do, tasting, has to do with our sense of smell. So if you take a lab or a golden that's super hyper and it's always panting, guess what? If it's panting, it can't scent. So that's not a good thing to look for. Now, if you have a lab and you live in a really cold climate, you're probably fine because he's not going to be panting. But don't take a Siberian Husky and be down, you know, in Baja, California, where it's, you know, 112 degrees, and the dog, of course, is going to be panting. He can't smell when he's panting. So if you are looking for a dog, don't look for a designer dog. Go to a shelter. Go find a really good, really, and I keep, really good trainer or behaviorist. We have people, if you want to reach out to us at 855-449-9288, we can even help you. And get somebody who really knows what to do. At this point, I'm telling you, I can't even believe how many people, I train service dogs. You know, training a service dog, you need to know the disability. You can't just train a dog to sit and lie down. you have to know that disability intimately. You have to be able to look at that person and say, what does that person need and how can I train a dog to mitigate that disability? It's not just training a dog to sit and lie down and lay down on a bus. It's teaching the dog to be an independent thinker, teaching that dog how to do it, not just what to do, but not waiting for a command. And that's where people get in trouble, because you have a dog, and let's say the dog, you know, let's say it's a lab, and you teach him to sit down, and he sits down. But first of all, if you're using it as a mobility dog for a child, because it's smaller, obviously, why would you want a mobility dog to sit down? Like, don't train the dog to do stuff that's going to be completely counter to everything you want it to do. If you want a dog to check your blood sugar, don't train it on food. Don't use food, because then every time the person eats something, the dog is going to go, oh, and go up to you and alert you incorrectly. You have to use a lot of common sense. Training service dogs particularly requires high intelligence and high IQ, high problem solving. So don't pick your local obedience trainer, who might be wonderful at training your dog to sit and lie down and roll over and play dead or whatever tricks. But when you have a service dog, that dog is your lifeline. That dog is going to save your life. Don't go to somebody who's trick training. You go to somebody, there are very few people who are good. I know we take dogs in sometimes for special circumstances, but we train the people. So we train the dogs, and then we put the people through a 10 to 12 week program. And basically, we teach you how not to break the dog. We teach you how not to do things so that you're not confusing the dog, so that you're not becoming part of the problem. So how do you train the dog actually to do things? Well, it depends on what kind of dog. Not every single method works for every single dog. The key is, again, making sure that you're communicating with the dog, like what we talked about for the whole first segment for the love of dog, right? That's what we talked about, communication. Letting the dog understand what it is you want so he can make that informed decision on his own. We don't want to have a dog always, you know, waiting to see what you're going to say, because that doesn't work. It just doesn't work. We want that dog to be thinking. So a dog who, let's say, like a guide dog, guide dogs don't work automatically and independently. A guide dog is basically the eyes of the person who can't see. And the dog, it's like a joke when I had, I was on the Garden State Parkway, and I had Wyatt in the back of my truck. And Wyatt jumped out of the truck. I got out of the driver's side. Wyatt jumped out of the truck in vest. I grabbed Wyatt and I started walking. And of course, I was holding his harness. And a lady had two kids, and she told the kids, go run up and open the door for that lady. She's blind. And I just kind of was taken aback, and I looked and I said, ma'am, thank you so much. That's wonderful. You're teaching your children, you know, to be kind to people with a disability. But did you not just see me get out of the driver's side of my car? She said, yes, I did. That's amazing. How do you do that? I mean, what do you say? Thank you so much for having your kids open the door. I mean, I was flabbergasted. I didn't know how to even answer that. How do I do that? Obviously, I'm not blind, but people think that a guide dog is the only kind of service dog. And I've trained dogs to be guide dogs for children. We have one right now, Kyra, for a beautiful little girl named Izzy. She's going to have Kyra, but Kyra does all kinds of things. She doesn't just do guide dog work. And guide dog work, it's not that it's an easy thing to train, but depending on the way you train, your success rate will be higher or lower. The more communicative you are and the more able you are to understand the nuances of your dog's personality and its abilities, the better your chance of actually being able to train that dog to assist you. So let's say that the dog you choose is super smart and he's great. Okay. Well, maybe he's not so great with other dogs, and that can be a big problem. You cannot put a dog with somebody who is not going to be able to be a strong handler if that dog has a propensity towards, let's say, playing with other dogs or going toward other dogs. And I've seen it. Believe me, I've seen it. One particular family who, I mean, we watched them ruin two dogs, and the same dogs we put with another family, and boom, they're perfect. We've had that happen twice. And we sit there and we go, how did this person ruin this dog? Like, this dog never did this before. So that does happen sometimes, because if you get weaker, if you're unstable, if you have somebody who's got a lot of issues, or a family member has a lot of issues, it's very possible that that dog might not be good in your situation, might be perfect for somebody else. So what we want to do is look at, okay, what is it that a dog needs to have? Okay, I'm going to go through a list here, and we're getting down towards the end of the show, so I'm going to give you a good list, and I want you to go and think of a list of your own as well. First thing is, the dog must be healthy. The dog must be well conformed, which means it has good conformation, F-O-R-M, not F-I-R-M, conformation, like a show dog. I don't care if your dog is a grand champion show dog like mine. I don't care if it's got a gold grand championship like mine. I care that your dog, whether it's a mutt or it's a designer dog or it's a purebred grand champion show dog, the dog must stand for square, which means that the dog stands. And if you can imagine, if you put, let's say, paint on each of the dog's feet, and then you plunk the dog down how it normally stands, and then you picked it up, and you should have a perfect rectangle or square on the floor. If your dog doesn't sit squarely on its haunches, it's always leaning over, one of the legs is always a little forward, or it doesn't stand that four square, it is probably not going to have the conformation required to be a true service dog, because you're going to make demands on the dog. The dog is going to be going up and down things. Like poor Wyatt, I mean, thank God my dogs, I breed them. Wyatt had excellent hips. He was like, you know, hips, elbows, thyroid. Everything was clear. He had amazing conformation. He was grand champion show dog. He was an amazing sire. Wyatt had 308,000 airline miles. 308,000 airline miles, which means I had a whole lot more than that, because sometimes I took his sister Wispa, sometimes I took my Savannah, I took Willow, I took Fallon. So, but one dog with 308,000 airline miles, probably at least 300,000, I would say, car miles, and he was with me for 10 and a half years of, or 11 years as my service dog of his 12 and a half. So if he didn't have that kind of good conformation, and he were doing all those things that we discussed, he would have broken down, absolutely. So you have to have good conformation, a good build to the dog, not too frail, not too thick. The dog also should have good health regarding, it shouldn't have any neck issues, back issues, feet issues. The leg should be nice and straight, in keeping with what a good representative of its breed or combination of breeds would have. The dog's toenails, you know, toenails are that important. Their toenails should be kept short. If you let your dog's toenails get really long, it rocks them back on their haunches, and it can start causing arthritis and tendon and ligament issues, joint issues, all the way up their legs and their backs. Bet you didn't think of that. Keep your dog's toenails short. Buy a Dremel or have somebody do a Dremel on those dog's toenails every couple of weeks. Make sure they stay short. Another thing that people don't think of is the dog has to be good with everything. People say, oh, the dog isn't good with children. I'll give it to a person with no children for a service dog. Well, how about if the person doesn't have kids now, but they have grandchildren at some point, or you're walking and a little kid runs up to the dog, as they used to do all the time with Wyatt and Savannah. They run up to your dog and give it a hug, and your dog is great with adults, doesn't like children. Oh, there's a lawsuit. So you have to be careful about that. And also, the dog must not be reactive to food. Otherwise, the dog may be walking in the diner like I did with Wyatt, and Wyatt and I were walking, and my friend's service dog, it was a golden retriever female, beautiful dog, had terrible hind-end conformation, but we'll leave that out, but beautiful, pretty, pretty dog. And as we were walking, we were in the River Edge Diner, and I remember the dog reaching over, grabbing the red and white checkered, like gingham check paper that apparently some fish and chips were in, and grabbed whatever it was, grabbed it and kept walking, grabbed it right off the table as we were walking behind it. I was mortified. Then we sat down. Wyatt went all the way under the bench area and the table. The other dog came in, and I felt, as I had my elbows on the table, like a grinding and a scraping underneath the table. And I realized it was her dog. Wyatt was like sleeping already. He was relaxing and doing what he was supposed to do, being a good boy. The other dog was chewing the gum off the bottom of the table at the diner. Craziness, absolute craziness. So try not to use food. Use petting instead. Use your gentle voice, your reassuring voice. Do the things that your dog loves. Instead of, you know, hey, give the dog a little back rub. Give him a little ear rub. Oh, an attaboy. That's what he wants. He doesn't need more food. The Honey Boo Boo School of Obedience Training. You don't need to do that with your dog. Don't be mean, but don't be bribing him. Don't be a human Pez dispenser. So all things considered, when you have a service dog, it's not only that the dog is capable of completing a task. It's that the dog is healthy physically. The dog doesn't have any immune-mediated conditions. It's not sick. You know that the dog's conformation is good. His longevity is good. Because, listen, you take a dog who's going to die at 5 or 6, and you get 3 years of service dog out of him, you should get at least a good 8 years, 6 to 8 at bare minimum on a larger breed, but you should get about 8 years. So make sure that when you teach your dog that you consider all these different things, so that at that point, you wind up having a dog who is not only going to love doing his job or her job, is going to be really good at doing his or her job, but is going to be able to do that job for a long time, be non-reactive to surroundings and being non-reactive to food and other things like that for a long time, because you need that dog. That dog is going to be your lifeline. You know, I don't know how it happens all the time, but for some reason, I get to the end of the hour and I feel like I just started. It's a great show. I hope everybody, lets everybody, all your friends know. And please feel free to call 855-449-9288. It's 1-855-HI-WYATT. And make sure you get a copy of my book. It's really good. It's easy to read. And it's going to give you all kinds of information, legit information that works. And that's called Happens, S-H-H-H, Happens, Dog Behavior 101. Well, I hope everybody has a fantastic weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Try to be COVID safe. And make sure that you love your family. Appreciate what you've got. Make sure your friends, you keep your friends close, but your enemies closer, as they say. And enjoy. Have a wonderful, happy, healthy week. Take care.